ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Mr. Modi, let's start by talking about you. In the 6 years that you've been Chief Minister of Gujarat, the Rajiv Gandhi Foundation has...
Narendra Modi is sitting down for an on-camera interview. He looks calm, wearing an orange shirt. At this point, he's the Chief Minister of the Indian state of Gujarat and running for a second term. But he's dealing with one of the biggest scandals of his career.
India today, on two separate occasions, has declared that you are the most efficient Chief Minister. And yet, despite that, people still call you to your face a mass murderer and they accuse you of being prejudiced against Muslims. Do you have an image problem?
The interviewer is Karan Thapa. He's one of India's most famous TV anchors. He was interviewing Modi on India's local CNN channel. And yeah, that was his first question, a pretty big one.
I think it's not proper to say that people. There are two or three persons, those who used to talk in this terminology. And I always say, God bless them.
You're saying this is a conspiracy of two, three people only?
The interview goes back and forth. Modi's not giving him much.
This is what I have information. It's not the people's voice.
Then Modi starts looking away. He's like, I have to rest.
The interest of Gujarat to continue. It's in your hands to change it.
I'll have to rest.
He points at something off the camera and starts taking his microphone off. The interviewer asks if he wants water and Modi says in Hindi, let's keep this friendship intact.
You came here, I'm happy and thankful to you. I can't hold this interview.
It's hard to hear, but Modi's saying, I can't do this interview. And he gets up and leaves. The interview lasts all of 3 minutes.
What's up?
This interview has been watched tens of millions of times. It's constantly going viral, even though it's almost 20 years old. It's become a meme here in India. It's because this is a rare time Narendra Modi lost control over his own story. The one he spent years perfectly managing. It's to do with an event that nearly cost him his entire political career. Deadly riots in Gujarat that still haunt him to this day. While Narendra Modi was Chief Minister of Gujarat, one of the deadliest religious riots happened in India. As leader of the state, Indians have been asking whether he could have done more to stop them. There have been so many inquiries, documentaries and court cases into his role in this. It's hugely divisive. Narendra Modi even got banned from going to the US, the UK and Europe for years because of these riots. I'm going to be honest, as a journalist in India, I'm pretty nervous about getting into this because if you bring up Modi's role in the Gujarat riots, you face massive backlash. It's a dark period in India's history that people don't want to talk about anymore. I'm Avani Dias and I'm the ABC's South Asia correspondent. I'm travelling around India trying to get to the bottom of the myths about Narendra Modi and how his mysterious and fascinating life has influenced the leader he is today and this country. I want to know, why are the Gujarat riots something Narendra Modi just does not want to speak about? The journalist who did that interview we just heard says Modi got his revenge on him because of it. And what do the people involved in these riots think of all this? This is Looking for Modi. On this episode, the riots.
So this is the farm of the family.
It's a big farm. We're driving through some farmland in regional Gujarat and we turn into this village. We go through a massive archway which has colourful statues of Hindu gods on it. And we end up at a large property. There's a barn to the left and a big house in front of us with a Hindu shrine out the front. We walk into the house which belongs to the head of the village and it's a woman, which is kind of unusual.
8,000 people.
Yeah.
Big, quite big. Yeah. All farming. Agriculture?
We all are born here.
Ah, he's son of Prahlad Bhai.
Oh, son. How old are you?
21.
21. Nice.
And I meet her nephew, Shivaji Patel. He's studying IT.
So all of this is cattle farming?
Yeah.
This whole land?
Yeah.
All of it? How many cattle do you have?
It's 40,000.
40?
Yeah.
Wow.
And one horse.
And he has a horse.
So this is the horse.
Yes.
What's his name?
Hiral.
Hiral.
Yeah, Hiral.
He doesn't like me.
No. Right now he's eating.
He's busy.
Yes, he's busy in eating.
Can you explain to me what happened on that day?
Yeah, in 2002, they all are go for a Lord Rama temple in Ayodhya.
Remember on the last episode, we were talking about the Hindu mobs who tore down the mosque in Ayodhya in northern India that led to religious riots all over the country. So it's 10 years after that, February 2002, and India felt like a powder keg. Things could explode again at any moment. Shivaji's dad, Prahlad Bhai, and thousands of other Hindu volunteers called Kasavaks had gone to Ayodhya for a ceremony and to campaign for a Hindu temple to be built there. And they got on a train back to Gujarat. It's a long way. It can take up to 2 days because the journey goes all across India. The train stopped at a town called Godhra in Gujarat at 7:42 that morning. Godhra is a relatively small town and it's almost half Muslim. At this point, there'd been a lot of Hindu-Muslim riots there. As the train was starting to leave to get to the next stop, the driver said someone pulled the emergency brake, grinding the train to a halt.
One coach, train coach, was totally fired up and he was in the first coach.
A coach was set on fire. Most of the people inside were Hindu pilgrims coming back from Ayodhya, like Shivaji's dad. He says his dad tried to run away, but decided to help some women who were caught in the fire.
He can run, but he thinks that our women are burning in the train. So he goes back and then saves 22 lives. And then he was burned.
59 people died, including kids and Shivaji's dad, Prahlad Bhai. The other details around this train fire are massively debated. Some news reports say when the train pulled up at Godhra, the Hindu pilgrims started chanting religious slogans and arguing with Muslim vendors on the platform.
Some people are attacking on their train.
Okay, so this is really contested and confusing because there have been so many investigations into this. At the time, some police said a Muslim mob surrounded the train and set it on fire.
The train carrying Hindu hardliners was returning from a religious protest in the town of Ayodhya when it was set alight by an angry mob in a Muslim-dominated area in the western state of Gujarat.
But in 2005, an Indian government investigation found the fire was an accident.
An Indian government probe has found that a train fire, which killed 59 Hindu pilgrims, setting off deadly sectarian riots in the state of Gujarat in 2002, was an accident. The new investigation found the fire was probably caused by someone cooking or smoking inside a coach.
At that time, the country was led by the Congress Party, which is in opposition to Modi's party, the BJP, now. Then, in 2008, a special court backed up what the police said originally and found thousands of locals, so Muslims, did it on purpose. In 2011, an Indian court backed that up, finding 31 people guilty of murder over the fire, saying they had pre-planned the whole thing. 11 of them were sentenced to death. An independent tribunal of judges also came to the same conclusion, and some researchers have as well. But the most contentious verdict on the fire came from Narendra Modi at the time. He had won his first election as the Chief Minister of Gujarat just a few months before the train fire, so his words carried weight. He put out a press release saying the train fire was a pre-planned attack and a violent act of terrorism.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi was the Chief Minister of Gujarat that time. And they came and for all the families of Karsevak and helped the families. He is feeling also proud for all the Karsevak and how much help they taken.
And are you in BJP as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the youth,
in
young
the
people's
youth,
wing.
Yes.
While we're talking, it's so clear that despite the trauma they've gone through, Shivaji's family doesn't blame Modi for anything. In fact, they support him. On the walls of their house, there are pictures of Shivaji's auntie wearing a scarf for Modi's party, the BJP. She runs the party's local branch, and Shivaji's now in the youth wing as well.
Mob justice is ruling the streets of Gujarat.
After the train fire, the bodies of the victims were laid out in public for people to see in Gujarat's largest city, Ahmedabad. And right-wing Hindu groups called for strikes and people to take to the streets.
Hardline Hindu leaders have called for a nationwide strike and have vowed to press on with their contentious Hindu nationalist agenda.
Strikes like that were banned because they could lead to violence, but Narendra Modi's state government was accused of doing nothing to stop them. And remember that journalist who interviewed Modi, Karan Thapa? I wanted to ask him what it was like when all of this was happening.
Mr. Modi's role was that he is said to have given permission for the dead bodies to be taken in public processions through the streets of Ahmedabad. And this sparked off anguish and outrage and communal bitter feeling, leading to an attack on the Muslims.
Narendra Modi told a special inquiry that the decision for the bodies to be laid out in public was a collective one, with other ministers and bureaucrats in his government. He said they did it because most of the relatives of the people who died were from Ahmedabad, so it saved them from travelling to Godhra to identify the bodies. I'm in Ahmedabad, and this is where the bodies were laid out. Now it's a busy, bustling place, but off the main road I go into one of the Muslim slums. It's made up of a bunch of small alleyways and shanty houses that are tightly squeezed in. I head up a rickety staircase to Qutubuddin Ansari's workshop, where he works as a tailor on top of his family home. After the train fire, as a Muslim man, Qutubuddin says things were tense in Ahmedabad, so his boss told everyone to go home early. Mobs started gathering on the highway near his house. This is our producer, Som Patida, who's helping us translate. Som, when we met Qutubuddin, he said that at first he didn't think anything would actually happen, that there were police around, but then he said that the mob went out of control.
Yes, he said there were more people in mobs than police, that officers ran away to save their own lives. He said mobs took opportunity and they went out of control. They started destroying properties and then started killing people.
And he said that some of his Hindu neighbours told him and the other Muslims to move out of their homes because things were getting bad. Did anything actually happen to him or his family?
Well, he said the riots went for days after train tragedy. All the houses and shops in the area were burned down. And he said he got injured. He said it was a loss to the country.
Some researchers say local media and members of Narendra Modi's government used his comment that the train fire was an act of terror to incite violence against Muslims. There were headlines and comments saying the fire was planned by Muslims who worked with Pakistan to do it. But there wasn't any proof of that. The day after the train fire, people came into Muslim communities like Qutubuddin's across Gujarat wearing saffron, the colour of the Hindu religion. They had weapons and started attacking buildings belonging to people of the religion.
Youths are rampaging through the western state's commercial capital, Ahmedabad, torching Muslim homes, businesses, and even mosques. Police have been either unable or unwilling to tackle India's worst religious violence in a decade. Army troops which have been deployed are yet to have an effect.
I was in Delhi. I was a journalist. I was aware of what had happened and horrified by it.
Journalist Karan Thapa was a big-time TV anchor. Religious riots are common in India. They've come up a lot on this podcast. But by 2002, the 24-hour news cycle had become a thing. People all over India and the world were watching the Gujarat riots playing out in real time. And those images of buildings burning and people dying are still etched into their memories.
You saw the devastation, you saw accounts, you heard accounts, you met the people who were butchered and killed and their families, and you saw and sensed their trauma. That was one big difference, that it happened in a very real sense on television, was portrayed by television, covered by television, whereas earlier riots in India had not been.
The riots went on for 3 days. Official figures say more than 1,000 people died, mostly Muslims. Others estimate more than 2,000 people were killed. Tens of thousands of properties were set on fire. Women were raped. It was brutal and one of the worst communal riots in India ever. While the majority of violence was against the Muslim community, there were reports of retaliation attacks on Hindus as well. After the riots, human rights groups and opposition parties accused Narendra Modi's Gujarat government of being complicit in the riots, saying he didn't try to stop the violence. He said that was not true. A few years after the riots, Modi was trying to get on with the job of Chief Minister of Gujarat. He was applying for a visa to go to the US and speak at a conference of Asian Americans who own hotels. But his visa was denied. It was under a law which stops foreigners from going to America if they've committed what they call particularly severe violations of religious freedom. He was basically banned from entering the US for 10 years after that. The UK and European countries put in similar bans too.
While Narendra Modi is unabashed about his prime ministerial ambitions, he may still have to travel quite a lot of distance before Washington recognizes his rise here in Indian politics. The US State Department has categorically said that its visa policy in Narendra Modi's case remains unchanged.
A couple of months after the riots, Narendra Modi did an interview with the New York Times and he said he had no regrets about what happened, just that he could have handled the news media better. He said he told police to deal with the violence. 98% of Gujarat was peaceful. Is it not a credit for the administration of the government? He said. A criminal case was filed against Modi, saying he didn't do enough to stop the riots. But 10 years after those riots, he was let off. The court found there wasn't any evidence to find him guilty, and India's top court said the claims Narendra Modi's government didn't do enough were wrong. I want to make it clear, no Indian authority has ever held Narendra Modi responsible for the riots. Som, did Qutbuddin, the Muslim man who was in the riots, did he think that Modi should have been held responsible for it?
Well, he said he was responsible for the state of Gujarat as chief minister, but that's it's all been looked at formally. And he can't say Modi was involved in the riots.
But he did say that no matter what, it was tragic and that there's a stain of the riots in his state of Gujarat.
Yes, he said.
In some places, politicians have gone down for much less. But Narendra Modi powered through.
Voters in India's troubled state of Gujarat go to the polls tomorrow to choose a state assembly and to decide whether or not to re-elect its controversial chief minister.
5 years after the riots, he was trying to get re-elected as the chief minister of Gujarat, and Karan Thapa, the TV anchor, was like, I want an interview. After a letter and a bunch of calls to his contacts, Modi agreed.
What I record is as soon as I got out of the plane and sat in the car on my way to the hotel, I got a call on my mobile and it was Narendra Modi to say, welcome to Gujarat. Did you have a good journey? And I said, I've had a fantastic journey and I'm excited to be in Gujarat because this is my first visit to Ahmedabad. And he said, the interview's at 4 in the afternoon. Why don't you come a little earlier? We'll have a chat and a cup of tea. And I said, I would love to do that. And I think we agreed that we would meet at 3:30.
A few years earlier, Modi had even helped Karan prep for a different interview with the head of the RSS, the far-right organisation.
I was therefore someone who was, in a sense, not indebted, but very aware that this can be a helpful person and an intelligent person and who had certainly in the past been very considerate when he'd briefed me off the record for this earlier interview.
So Karan got to Modi's house in Gujarat. They had a cup of tea, some small talk about the state, the weather. The cameras were set up and they sat down for the interview.
My first question was to say to him, the Rajiv Gandhi Foundation and India Today magazine consider you the best chief minister in the country. But 100 million Muslims look upon you, or maybe I said 140 million Muslims look upon you as a mass murderer. 6 weeks before your re-election, do you have an image problem?
Do you have an image problem?
And I knew that the term mass murderer would annoy and infuriate him.
Modi said, well, that's just the opinion of a couple of people. Karan challenged him and said millions of people see you as prejudiced against Muslims and asked him about different criticisms against him about his role in the riots.
In August 2004, the Supreme Court reopened over 2,100 cases out of a total of around 4,600, almost 40%. And they did so because they believed justice hadn't happened in Modi's Gujarat.
I'll be happy. And I'm happy because of this judgment. Because ultimately, the court of law will take the decision.
Modi was right. Ultimately, the courts did say he was not guilty of anything.
Can I suggest something to you?
I have no problem.
Why can't you say that you regret the killings that happened? Why can't you say that what? Maybe the government should have done more to protect the Muslims?
What I have to say, I have said at that time. And you can find out my statements.
Just say it again.
Not necessary. I have to talk about the in 2007, everything, what you want to talk.
But by not saying it again, by not letting people hear the message repeatedly, you're allowing an image that is contrary to the interest of Gujarat to continue. It's in your hands to change it.
Oh, I'll have to rest. Portable water.
Modi was like, well, it's all out there. I'm not going to say anything else on these riots. And he got up and left. Karan says he spent an hour afterwards trying to get Modi to sit back down, saying, sorry, we can get to all your other plans for Gujarat and move on from the riots. He says he was like, if you let me take away this short interview where you got up and left, it'll become headline news tomorrow.
He was extremely hospitable and polite. He gave me tea. He gave me Gujarati mithai, little Gujarati things called dhoklas. I then said to him, I said, Mr. Modi, if you leave me with 2.5 minutes, the channel will use this as a news story. It will appear in every single news bulletin tomorrow, which means it will be broadcast 36 times during the day. But if you do the interview, it will appear once and be repeated once and disappear into the ether forever and be forgotten.
Obviously, it didn't work, so Karan left, and the next day, the Modi interview was top news.
Still unwilling to talk about his role during the post-Godhra riots, Gujarat Chief Minister Narendra Modi abruptly ends an interview with CNN IBN's Karan Thapar on Devil's Advocate when asked if he regretted.
Later that night, Karan says he got a call from Narendra Modi.
He said, you put a gun on my shoulder. You put a gun and you fired off my shoulder. So I said, but that is exactly what I told you would happen. And he laughed and he said, anyway, forget about it. He says, and I remember his words precisely. He said, Karan brother, I love you. And then he broke into Hindi and said, Jab main Delhi aaunga, hum bhojan karenge. When I come to Delhi, we'll have a meal together. Now, he's been in Delhi for the last 10 years. I don't know about the love, but there's been no meal either.
So Modi was trying to keep up his relationship with this top journo. But Karan says he heard from a bunch of Modi's close aides that he told them he would get his revenge. Narendra Modi kept going with his campaign for a second term as Gujarat Chief Minister. He was out on the road speaking at rallies. Modi never spoke about the Muslims who died in the riots, but did constantly talk about the Hindu pilgrims who died in the train fire. His campaign is about appealing to India's Hindu majority. And despite everything Modi's gone through with the riots, he goes on to win the 2007 election as Chief Minister of Gujarat. And in 2012, he wins again. He's just so popular.
If my Gujarat will be good, then tomorrow my will be good.
In his victory speech, he doesn't apologise specifically for the riots, but he says, "There may have been a time when I hurt someone or when I made a mistake. I ask my 60 million Gujaratis to forgive me." Narendra Modi rides on the high. He goes on to win the prime ministership twice with massive majorities.
Narendra Modi's popular nickname is Namo, and his crushing victory in India's election has now been labelled a Sunamo.
Yet the Gujarat riots keep coming up.
India's BBC offices have been raided by the country's tax department weeks after the broadcaster aired a documentary critical of the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi.
One day in February last year, in my group chat with other correspondents, we heard the BBC offices in Delhi and Mumbai were getting raided by tax authorities. It was happening a few weeks after the BBC aired a documentary which was critical of Narendra Modi's handling of the riots. For the first time, the documentary mentioned this report from the UK government, which claims Modi was directly responsible for what it calls the climate of impunity that started the violence. Indian authorities swung into action. Police detained students in one of the biggest universities for screening the film. The doco was banned across the country.
This is a complete violation of all kinds of, you know, democratic fundamental rights of every citizen of this country.
And the Modi government's foreign ministry spokesman, Arindam Bagchi, comes out and slams the film.
We think it's a propaganda piece. Our assessment is it's a propaganda piece. Now, how can you say that? I'm saying it. We have seen it and I feel it's a propaganda piece. I don't know what's the perspective.
The way he responded to the BBC documentary has made this an even bigger issue.
And remember how Karan Thapa said he'd heard that Modi said he'd get his revenge for that infamous interview after the riots? Apparently he got it.
Yes, he definitely did. He didn't get his... Well, he didn't take his revenge till around 2017. And suddenly in 2017, the spokesmen were accepting and cancelling and not coming to discussions. Ministers were agreeing to interviews and backing out literally at the last moment, an hour before or the night before. And when this happened four or five times within a period of 6 days, I began to get a little suspicious and say, this is too much of a coincidence.
Karan Thapa went from being one of India's biggest news anchors to not being able to get any interviews with people in Narendra Modi's party or government. He says some politicians told him they weren't allowed to do it. It's made it impossible for him to do his job as a political TV interviewer.
No television channel is willing to take programs from me.
And what I find interesting about all of this is, on one hand, Narendra Modi is the guy whose government bans a documentary it doesn't like, which then ended up with more people watching it. Or he gets his revenge on the journalist who did an interview that made him look bad. But he's also this amazing media operator that does so well to curate his image. He's the kind of guy who will sit down and have tea with that same journalist who just did a takedown interview with him.
Most human beings do have different aspects. I'm not saying there's a Jekyll and a Hyde aspect to Modi. That would be putting it too strongly, but people do have different aspects of their personality which come out. And here you saw, in almost immediate conjunction, two different sides of the man. But those are both aspects of Modi. It's just that maybe, I'm guessing, maybe having realized instinctively that, oops, I shouldn't have ended it the way I did, he decided, let me make sure that at least the image that I leave with him is a better one than the one that I created when I walked out of the interview.
So what does Mr. Modi's treatment of you as a journalist over all these years, what does that tell you about his strategy towards the media?
To keep the media in a position where they are uncertain, insecure, and completely dependent on you. It also tells you something else, that he finds subtle, clever, and not necessarily immediately detectable ways of keeping the media subservient. It's not outright censorship, it's more corrosive and subtle because it's subterranean. So when that aspect of Modi's legacy is written about, there's no doubt that people will say this man's instincts and this man's behavior was not democratic. He didn't like a free press. He didn't appreciate criticism. He did everything he could to ensure that it would be subservient, that it would built. He likes media that builds him up.
As Narendra Modi got more powerful in the world, the UK and European countries lifted the bans against him travelling there, which were put in place because of the riots. And after he got elected as Prime Minister of the world's most populous country, Narendra Modi was asked to come back to the US. Just last year, he was invited to a prestigious state dinner with President Joe Biden. It's a full 180. For the people who are still dealing with the trauma of the riots, though, it's something they'll have to live with forever, like Shivaji Patel, whose dad was one of the Hindu pilgrims who died in the train fire. Every day, his family prays for him at the shrine.
Yeah, it's a very tough process when you can't have a father and you are growing up. All my responsibilities on my mother was born 2 months after the tragedy. And then when I growing up, I was heard about the everything, what happened there. And I am feeling proud of my father.
At one point when we're chatting to Qutubuddin, the Muslim man whose slum was burned down by mobs, he starts crying. He's telling us about a Hindu man who became friends with him after the riots, who told him that Hindus are also sad about that event. He said, "We couldn't reduce your pain even if we wish, but he asked me to never feel alone, and that he and many others like him are with me," Qutubuddin says. And journalist Karan Thapa says the riots continue to affect Modi's legacy.
So what have the riots meant for his legacy or his prime ministership or him as a leader in India?
It's a black mark on his career that will always be there. With time, it's become more distant, but it hasn't by any means been erased. It's a cloud that hovers over him and will not banish in a hurry and has not banished in a hurry. And it has become entrenched as a problem because of his handling and response to it.
We made several requests for an interview with Narendra Modi. So how has Narendra Modi stayed so popular for years? It seems like nothing can bring him down. He's made normal Indians feel empowered. And he's done that by getting close to the super rich, the billionaires. That's on the next episode of Looking for Modi. This podcast is by me, Avani Dias, and produced by Madeline Jenner. Research by Som Patidar and Aditya Varia. And audio production is by Anna John.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.